The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're recovering from Purim, but I think a lot of people are confused about what this Shushan Purim day is all about.
Yes, what is it all about?
And why we celebrate. So actually, Jerusalem today celebrates Purim as opposed to yesterday, which the rest of the world celebrated. And the reason for this is apparently that in the time of when the Purim miracle took place and there was this anti-Semitism which focused around the area of Shushan, which is in modern-day Iran, apparently the battles between the Jews and others continued an extra day in the city of Shushan. And as a result of that, it's traditional for Jerusalem to celebrate Purim a day later instead of on the 14th of Adar like everywhere else, actually on the 15th of Adar. And then it became traditional for those cities that were actually walled cities during a particular period in time, during the time of Joshua's conquest of the land of Israel. Those cities that were walled cities were also then included in the celebration of Purim a day later. The only city that we're absolutely sure about that was in fact a walled city was Jerusalem. And so therefore Jerusalem, it is absolutely sure that Purim is celebrated today as opposed to yesterday. There are a host of other cities where there is some doubt about whether they were in fact walled cities at the time of Joshua's conquest of Eretz Israel. And as a result of that, and those cities actually celebrate Purim yesterday, as we all did, but they also read Megillah today without the traditional blessings and things like that, in order just to be sure, including Hebron and Tzfat and Tiberias and Akko and Ashdod, Ashkelon, Beersheba, Beit Sha'an, Beit Shemesh, other places, even in Haifa, Jaffa, Lod, Ramla, Shechem. These are some places that will traditionally also read the Megillah today, as well as yesterday, for those people who might have missed out on that opportunity. So that's some of the confusion, I think, put to rest about Shushan Purim. Or may, I don't know if all the confusion, but at least some of the confusion. And traditionally with these things, clarification also creates further confusion.
Absolutely. The corona restrictions in place reported to be costing the Israeli economy almost 5 billion shekel. What is the main influence of this cost on this?
Well,
cost?
I think it's really that the tourism industry is kind of closed down for Corona at the moment. And I think that this lack of tourism, all the cancellations of the various events, whether it be people visiting for Pesach, whether it be Israelis traveling abroad during this time, especially over the Pesach holiday, whether it be events like the Gay Pride Parade, which obviously will not be taking place. All of this is really costing the Israeli economy quite dearly. And, of course, the fact that a lot of people are staying home, not going to work, because of the fact that they've been put into quarantine as a result of either having traveled abroad and returned back recently or as a result of having come into direct contact with people who have been diagnosed with corona. The latest victim list in Israel was published yesterday, 75 victims now who have been diagnosed with the COVID-19 virus. And the Israeli Ministry of Health has set an expectation that by the weekend, it is expected that there will be up to 100 people in Israel who have been diagnosed with COVID-19, including a 9-year-old child who returned from Spain on a holiday recently. And of course, this kind of throws into the air all of those assumptions that this virus doesn't affect children younger than a certain age. If there's a 9-year-old who has contracted the virus, then obviously I think we are all at risk. And so the restrictions continue to be very, very stringent indeed, including the setting up of some sort of a police force to make sure that those people who are supposed to be in quarantine are actually adhering to their quarantine restrictions. There have been reports of people wholesale violations of quarantine, not sticking to the restrictions as are required. And of course, there's a huge risk that the virus will be spread by people who are not adhering to quarantine. The problem, of course, is that most of the people who are in quarantine don't show any signs at all of being unwell, and so therefore they feel that they're wasting their time being in quarantine, because really there's nothing wrong with them and they can continue their daily activities as normal But of course, they could be carrying the virus in a way that doesn't present itself. And so therefore, this is why restrictions are very stringent indeed, that even people who do not show any signs of COVID-19 are supposed to be in isolation in order to prevent the spread. But one of the things that's really caught my attention about COVID-19, because of course that's kind of the only thing that we can really talk about, seeing as that's all that's really in the news recently. But in Iran, there have been something like 300 deaths from the coronavirus already, and thousands of people affected. But what's interesting and fascinating to me about the way that it's spread in Iran, that it's really spread amongst the upper echelons of society. Clerics, parliamentarians, senior government officials are dying from COVID-19. Apparently something like almost 10% of Iran's parliament has been infected. I mean, this is something that's really fascinating. I'm trying to understand why this is. No real answers, but some people are suggesting that these are people who are not really adhering to restrictions, to quarantine restrictions and things like that. They're just traveling around and not getting medical attention as they require, and they're just spreading it on a wholesale basis. And as a result of which, it's really spreading amongst the senior members of Iranian society, including, by the way, the deputy minister of health, who's died as a result of having contracted the COVID-19 virus.
One of our listeners asking, what happens to El Al crew when they return to Israel? Do they need to go into quarantine?
So according to the rules, they do. I haven't specifically looked what the El Al crews are doing, but what we do know is that El Al is flying a very, very, very limited service. I mean, there is hardly any demand for flights at the moment. The official notification about flights abroad is that any flights which are not absolutely 100% required should be postponed or cancelled at the moment. And we do know that very, very few people are travelling into Israel. So the El Al service is a very limited one, even though the El Al CEO has come on saying, you know, El Al is actually a national service and they won't stop flying completely. But my understanding is that they're probably rotating the crew. So people who go abroad come back and go into quarantine, or alternatively, they don't allow the crews to disembark at the distant end. And so they just turn them around and bring them straight back again. And in that way, they can avoid having to go into quarantine because they haven't really been abroad. They've just stayed on the plane and come straight back again. So I think for the shorter haul flights, where they can just turn them around and come back, they're doing that. But it's an interesting question, and I do have some friends who fly with El Al, so I'm going to ask them. I will try and get hold of them and ask them what the crew are doing at the moment in order to avoid this. Yeah. And I hope that I will have a fuller answer once I've had a chance to speak to them.
What's also interesting is I certainly know with the South African route that I know that normally there's a Saturday night flight to Israel. This week there isn't one, so they have cut one flight from their schedule, certainly at least this week, which kind of makes sense. The Anthony could I can't is reported to be preparing for a fourth election.
I don't know whether this is real or not. I mean, you know, the Likud officials have said that the most likely scenario is that political instability will continue, whatever that means. Now, there are alternatives to all of this, right, which is a government of national unity. And I have heard that there were discussions about a government of national unity involving Prime Minister Netanyahu being the prime minister for the first year, followed by 2 years of Benny Gantz, and then followed by Netanyahu returning, or whoever is leading the Likud at that stage, returning for the final year of the four-year period. And I think that probably sounds like sensible stuff. I mean, it sounds like something that the Israeli economy could quite well do with right now. But it seems as if, though, Benny Gantz's attempts to try to form a minority coalition have sort of weakened his negotiating position with regard to a government of national unity, because we do know that he's been talking to Avigdor Lieberman, for example, and he's been talking, as we reported yesterday, to the joint list of Arab parties, which is made up of four different parties. But if we have a look at how the number of seats has fallen out, Kahol Levan have 33 seats. Their natural partners, which is the Labour, Gesher, Meretz grouping, have 7 seats. Yisrael Beiteinu have 7 seats. So that brings them to a total of 47, which is very, very far from the 61 that he needs. And therefore, there has been this notion that he will be supported from outside the coalition by the 15 seats which make up the Joint Arab List. The Joint Arab List, of course, which involves 4 Arab parties, one of whom in particular is considered to be very, very extreme indeed, called for the destruction of the State of Israel and, you know, anti-Jewish Israel in every possible respect, supported terrorism and really being quite extreme. And so the notion that the Kahol Levan coalition could have anything to do with that particular Arab party within the Arab List is anathema to most Jews and to most people living in Israel, because you know, we believe in our right to live here as Jews, and any party, especially a party that is represented in the Knesset, which calls for the destruction of the State of Israel as a Jewish state and supports terrorism and supports terrorist organizations, it doesn't seem like we want to have any support from them at all in the Knesset. But of course, Yair Lapid has come out saying, well, the support from the Joint Arab List would only really be to set the government up, because once the government has been set up, they will effectively rule as a minority government. Now, of course, nobody believes that in their right mind, because there are always going to be issues that come up for the vote which are going to be controversial and which are going to potentially have a lot of support from outside of the government. And if Netanyahu's coalition has 58 seats and the ruling Kahol Levan coalition has 47 seats, you can imagine that it's going to kind of be almost ungovernable, because the Netanyahu coalition will do whatever they can in order to block key pieces of legislation, and they will have the majority to be able to do that. So it's not clear to me how there can be a minority government on that basis. The obvious answer is a government of national unity, particularly now when we're fighting health issues, we're fighting potential economic issues, the stock exchange is collapsed. We're seeing that the corona is costing the State of Israel almost 5 billion shekels a month while it lasts. And of course, there are people who've said that Kahol Levan and Likud really need to put their differences aside. They need to set up a government in the interests of being able to marshal Israel through this critical time when it's fighting this huge coronavirus and potential economic consequences as a result of that. I don't see that happening anytime soon. I have to say that even though the most sensible thing would be to put differences aside and to set up a government of national unity, all the time that Kahol Levan are negotiating with the Joint Arab List and with Lieberman on the basis that they've been doing up until now, seems to really dilute and weaken their negotiating position with regard to setting up a government of national unity. And really, right now, Prime Minister Netanyahu is almost giving no attention at all to setting up of a government, and really is focusing all of his efforts, whatever he does, whenever he comes out in public, he's really talking about fighting corona. I think that he feels that that's going to strengthen his position in the public.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. Yossi says, I'm so tired of the corona virus conversation that I'm actually prepared to even listen to talking about Israel's fourth election.
Yes, very, very sad state of affairs indeed. Unfortunately, guys, the only two things that are in the news right now are corona and election to some degree.
In Israel, yeah.
Certainly in Israel. Those are really the two things that you know, really dominate the press and dominate discussion right now. So I am hopeful that we'll find something a little bit more, a little different, let's say, to talk about.
You know,
Zanati
and I were saying, a little bit earlier, you know, when I go through all of the news, and I go through so many different sites to try and find stories that I know that our listeners will find interesting. And at the moment, it is absolutely impossible because the news is 100% dominated. Well, in fact, in Israel, it's corona and election. elections, and in America it's the primaries and Corona. But aside from that, maybe South Africa we've got a hint of Eskom, but aside from that, that's pretty much all that anyone has to talk about. Anthony Reich, we do need to leave it there. I'll chat to you tomorrow morning at 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. A very, very good morning to you. Here's Anati with your news.